Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Hi, this is Rebecca Buchanan, host of New Books Network, New Books in Popular Culture, and today I'm here with Junior Tomlin, who has a new book of flyer and cover art out. So, Junior, thanks for being here.
You're welcome. Great being here.
I'm wondering if we can start to talk a little bit about who you are and why this book came together. So can you tell us a little bit about you and the work that you've done as an artist?
Well, I was born in 1960 in London, in Notting Hill Gate. Yeah, my parentage is Caribbean. Yeah, my parents are Jamaican. And I've always been doing art for the last like 30 odd years. And the way this book came about is that I was contacted by Colin Stephen from The Knowledge, you know, magazine. And he made me an offer I couldn't refuse because he said it was about, isn't it about time you put together an art book? And I thoroughly agreed with him because I've had over the years an idea to put together a book myself. But because of like funds and things like that and time and looking for work, I wasn't able to do so.
So this book is full of both cover art for albums as well as sort of flyers, and it covers very much the rave scene in the UK. So can you talk a little bit about how you got sort of involved in doing this work for the flyers and the cover art?
Yeah, it started off basically I was doing record covers first. The first record cover that I done was 1989, so that, you know, that's like 31 years ago. And from then, I started to work with other record labels, one of them being Kickin' Records. Yeah, but the first first record label that I worked for was called Mute Records, and I'd done Renegade Soundwaves, Space Gladiator artwork, and from there, more record covers followed. So as I said, I worked for Kickin' Records, and I worked for a company just around the corner from Kickin' called Vinyl Solution. And it was from there that I got into doing rave flyers, where I used to hang out at the offices of Kickin' Records, and I met a rave promoter who basically wanted a flyer. So that was the beginning of me doing record covers and rave flyers nearly at the same time, because one fed into the other.
And can you talk a little bit, because this book is sort of filled with your art, so before we start talking about those in particular, can you talk a little bit about your aesthetic and the sort of Afrofuturist images and aesthetic that you have in these flyers?
Yeah, well, my aesthetic is like it's like a cross between Afrofuturism, surrealism, you know, and any science fiction and science fantasy, all basically blended and mashed up together. So that's basically like the, you know, the look.
And sort of what has inspired that with you? Can you talk a little bit about your inspiration?
Yeah, my inspirations was like, you know, 60s and 70s sci-fi. And also, you know, artwork, because I was, you know, an artist. And I've done a lot of, like, you know, history of art. But there was one particular, you know, genre of art, that art movement that I really liked. And that was the Surrealist movement. And people like, you know, Max Ernst, Salvador Dali, and others. But I also, like, draw inspiration from Leonardo da Vinci and Michelangelo and some of the other great masters, you know, for their, you know, their use of color and style. But it's for the surrealism that I really, like, adhere to, because I really like it's out of the brain type of imagery.
So let's sort of talk about some of these sort of the cover art, and then some of the flyers that you've put together. I don't know if there's one you want to start with, or I've got the book open and I'm just looking at the sort of the first one that you talk about, which is the Renegade Soundwave Space Gladiator.
Yeah.
So can you share a little bit about how you got connected with Mute and then putting together this imagery for them, this cover for them?
Yeah. With how the Renegade Soundwave artwork came about, is that at that particular time I was working at the London Cartoon Centre as a student, teaching students a little bit of sequential art, but mainly I was teaching them how to use an airbrush. So I was an airbrush tutor. So for a couple of weeks I was to tutor the students, and then one day somebody came over from Mute Records looking for an airbrush artist. So evidently, I thought they were basically looking at me, looking for me. So that is how I met the manager for Renegade Soundwave. And then we set up another meeting where I met the band, and they told me about the track that they were doing. And the track was basically Space Gladiator. And I had an idea for it. I basically wanted it to be like a female RoboCop. Because at that particular time, RoboCop was like just being released, maybe 1 or 2 years before. So I had that image firmly planted in my mind. So I'd done a couple of sketches and I showed it to them, and they was quite happy with it to give me the go ahead. And so that is how Space Gladiator, the artwork, was born. The actual artwork was A-O in size. It was quite a big piece of artwork. So I basically had to stick it onto my wall and airbrush it straight onto it. But it was fun. That was my first one. That one's one of my you know, personal favorites, because that was the first record cover that I've ever done.
Right. And then you did a couple more for that, for Mute. And then you moved to Kick It. I love the Bee Scientist.
Yeah.
which is really great. So can you talk a little bit, right? So you moved... you were working at Vinyl Solutions, and it's sort of starting to work for one label, it sounds like, allowed you to make connections with other folks. So can you talk a little bit about your Bee Scientist imagery and what you were doing with Kickin?
Yeah, because Kickin Records was the second label that I worked with. And the person who wanted me to do the Bee, he was called a scientist. So he had this idea for a track called The Bee. And I basically wanted to make this Bee a little bit special. So it's basically like a bionic looking Bee, you know, a Bee with like metal parts. And he also has like a wicked little grin, this Bee has. And as you can
yes.
see, yeah, and as you can see next to it, you see the pencil sketch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the idea for the pencil sets here is that I wanted the thorax of the Bee to basically be like a petrol tank for a motorcycle. So that's why it's got those lines at the top.
So when you do this art, just for my clarity and others' clarity, you're drawing the images and then are you transferring them? You're just airbrushing them? Are they all sort of airbrushed? And then do you move into sort of computerized? Or how do you move from your sketch to the final image?
Well, they all start off as sketches.
Mm-hmm.
When the client is happy with the sketch, I basically have to redraw the entire sketch on line board, ready to be airbrushed. So these were the days where everything was done by hand, where you had to basically draw things a couple of times just to get it right. And then when you put it on board, you put in all the detail that you want to put in, and then you start airbrushing. And then after you take off the film, you can still put in more detail. Like with the bee, he's got like a lot of hair on him. So it's basically like a paintbrush, making those little strokes to make it look like it's hair. No, it's quite fun. I enjoyed the bee, you know, immensely. It was fun.
Right. And can you talk a little bit about then how you make connections between each of the record labels?
Yeah, there's a connection between Kickin' Records and Vinyl Solution because of their proximity to each other. One was basically just, 20 seconds just around the corner. And both of the managers, they knew each other. And because of that, they came up with this idea of like, let's do a compilation album together called Kickin' versus Vinyl. And that one was quite interesting, where it's just basically two big robot DJs making artwork, now making music, and with the decks and the music systems, they basically just throw it in the middle in a smouldering pile as the crowd cheers on.
So the other thing that's one of the things that at Kickin' has some really big names that come out of sort of jungle and drum and bass. So you've done cover art for Groove Rider, you have in here. So can you talk a little bit about working with some of these artists?
Yeah, in some of the cases, would you believe I never met the artist? it's funny is that it just, a lot of it went through, you know, the manager, because I can't ever remember meeting Groove Rider. I think the brief was we've got this record. It's going to be called Groove Rider Hard Step Selection. Yeah, do a couple of roughs. So in other words, it was okayed by the manager, but I don't know if it was ever okayed by Groove Rider himself. It's very interesting that. It's like doing it blind, really.
Yeah, because some of them you seem to like have built relationships with the artists, and then so others, it's just.
Yeah, it's like being so famous you can't be found. But you have to do it for the manager. The manager knows best.
Yeah. Well, and then there's some funny, like the banana sausage, which banana is spelled incorrectly.
Yes. And you know what? Grant, otherwise known as Wish Doctor, he knew it. He knew that it was spelled incorrectly, and he got away with it.
And so the image is just a sausage in a banana peel, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because it's nearly like a no-brainer, really, because it's like the title says it all. Mm-hmm. It basically made the artwork and stuff. Wait a minute, a banana, a sausage. It's the same thing as a banana. Oh yeah, let's stick one inside the other. And that's how banana sausage was born.
With banana spelled with two B-A-N-N, A-N-A-N for people who are A-N-A. And then, so you've done, we could just sort of walk through. So Vinyl Solution, so you work with Vinyl Solution. So can you talk a little bit about the work you did with your collaborations with Vinyl Solution?
Yeah. As I was saying before, the first collaboration was Head to Head with Kicking Records, which was you know, a fun piece to do with those like gigantic robots and the crowd moving on, cheering on. And then I worked for, done a cover for Depth Charge, which is basically like a zombie, basically bursting, decomposing as the sun comes up. Yeah. And the title of that one is Dead by Dawn, where you can just about see it in the background underneath the word Depth Charge.
Yep, one of the ones I love in this sort of the work that you did for Vinyl Solution is the MIDI brain where eyes with the large with it's all it is sort of the eye with the iris there and then the earth inside of that.
Yeah, that's quite surreal. It works on the level of like the idea of like a microcosm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can get like, you know, large planets, why can't you get like tiny small planets that basically just float around? It's like the idea of like my science fiction way of thinking in terms of like the surrealism aspect of, can you imagine that you could see a planet that small floating around? It's quite interesting because I had to research what does an eye look like. And in those days, you can only find photographs. These days, you can basically look on the internet and find, you know, things of, you know, greater detail. That's why the eye looks a little bit vague. If I had more time, if I was doing it now, it would have had more detail to it. But I enjoyed that piece. I even had to come up with the text as well.
Mm-hmm. No, I love, like, it very much, that when you talk about the surrealism, it makes me think of something like a Dali-esque kind of look. And I love the eye with the, and the detail with the eye, with the lashes and all of that.
Yeah.
So you have some too, where you do A and B sides. So I think the Secret Desire is really interesting because there's a bit of a story involved in that. So can you talk a little bit about that as well?
Yeah. This is one that I really love doing, because it also a throwback to me watching 2001: A Space Odyssey.
Mm.
Yeah, because that black square is basically like, you know, it's the obelisk from 2001, and the client, Secret Desire, he basically wanted it done in a comic strip, so I had to basically. I had this idea to basically tell a story of this like black monolith, and then on the B side, you see the black monolith basically fading out over time. So the last panel is where you just see the shape, and you see that in the middle of the shape, it's sharper than the outside. So it's basically trying to do the transition of like it's a different time. But I thoroughly enjoyed that one, you know, especially like doing, you know, landscapes and skies.
One thing I think is interesting as well is that there's cover art in here, most of which was used, but you do have, when you talk about working with Single Minded, some cover art that was not used. Yeah. So can you talk a little bit, which I found really interesting. I was like, okay, because it's a great, I love the, like it's the, this, so this piece, can we, you talk a little bit about the piece you have in here that's not used? I think it's a great image, right? With this sort of, the God and the planets.
Oh dear. Oh, the God Adrenaline. Now this was fun, you know. Tony, who got me interested in this one, he said, "Yeah, I've got this guy. Yeah, he's called himself the God of Adrenaline, and he wants you to do a cover." So I said, "Yeah, he wants to look like a superhero, but the main thing is that he has to have this mask on, you know, the red mask." So So I'd done a couple of sketches. I showed it to Tony, who showed it to the client, and it was okayed. So I went to do like the full digital piece now, put it all down the colour. Tony was happy with it. And then when we showed the client, he said he would not accept it, yeah, because his package wasn't big enough.
But it's a great you have one for single-minded. You have this next on the sort of next page, the trip to the Andes. I really love that image. It very much looks like a photograph to me. So could you talk about that compilation a bit and what you did for it?
Yeah, what I did with that, the trip to the Andes, I wanted to basically use the Mayan codec, which is basically that big round image that you're actually looking at. And because it was like trip to the Andes, I thought, wait a minute, I can put little trippy things in there. So I was basically looking at this piece long enough for you to see little things that you could basically take out. Because the guy in the middle, he's got headphones on.
Mm.
One, he's got headphones on. There's also a ship in there. There's also a bus. There's also a hippie in the tent. If you look closely, it's packed with little things inside it. And it's just basically like colouring in certain bits of this image. So your eyes is drawn to the colour aspect. And above his head, you've got two speaker boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Originally, I had the man who with the headphones smoking a fat spliff, but I think that idea didn't go down too well, so that was taken out.
but it's a beautiful image. So yeah. I found you did work for Millennium. And I found this really, I felt that this was much different. The work that you did on a lot of this was much different than the work, than a lot of your other work, very like clean lines, very minimalist. So can you talk a little bit about some of the work you've done, you did for Millennium?
Yeah, Millennium was a German company. And the man in charge of Millennium, he used to do the production of the music from Kicking Records, would you believe?
Mm.
Yeah, he left Kicking to form his own company, and that's how we got Millennium Records. The first track that they produced was called Love Groove, Global Warming. So he had this idea of like a metallic heart on a background of red velvet. Yeah, so this was basically, mm-hmm. This is digital. So it was quite fun, working digital. The computer at that particular time was very slow, so I had to basically make the most of it. I enjoyed doing the background, but the printing always sometimes let it down. Yeah, mm. It's great on the screen, but when it gets printed, there some of the detail is lost because they oversaturate the color.
Mm-hmm.
And then they've done the sequel to Love Groove, that one, and called it Dirty Life, where they basically just asked me to change the color of the background, which I did, to a more like gold color. But it's quite interesting. If I was doing it again, I would do it differently. I would make it look a bit more chromey.
Mm-hmm. So the next is, so you have Slam and Vinyl that you do covers for, but also rave flyers for. So can you talk about some of the work you did for Slam and Vinyl?
Yeah, Slam and Vinyl is a strange one because I think I'd done the flyers before I did the record covers for them. Yeah, this is all quite interesting because the early stuff was all done by hand. It's all done by airbrush, but some of the albums was basically done, using the computer. The second one, In Full Effect, the remixes. That's a computer one, computer image, where they just wanted the radiation symbol basically distressed. And the background of that is like a blue marble. So it's a simple image, but you know, I had fun basically like picking out the detail out of it to make it a little bit more rich. Otherwise it would just be being a little bit too plain. The one on the other page, yeah, the ride, is another interesting one, because I just thought of a person riding a futuristic bike with a leather jacket on and metallic legs. So it's basically like a robot dressed up. It was fun.
Yeah, and so some of these vary, like if you move to what you do with Artista, the expansions and the desire piece where you have sort of the two characters together is very much futuristic robots. So can you talk a little bit about that piece?
Yeah, the expansion one, Move Your Body. I enjoyed doing that one. That was when I was still stuck in a little bit like a robot phase, and I wanted to basically do more like Android type stuff. So, you know, you search for a reference material for the body, and it just basically changed the head to that like Cylon looking, you know, blank metallic face with this one long yellow glowing eye. With a nice red and yellow background, but it was quite fun to do. You know, for Expansions 95, and they recently used it for a car advert over in the UK. The Expansions Desire. My idea for that one is, it's like a robotic love. So the initial idea was basically like, you know, you've got the woman looking into the man's face. I'm looking at the man, yeah, we're touching each other with lasers. And when the client saw it, they said, "Oh, it's all very nice, but can you make their lips look like they're like melding together?" Now, do you remember a film called The Lawnmower Man?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes.
They said, "Yeah, they wanted me to do an effect like that, yeah, where their lips are basically like." Melding together, so that's how that one was made. Because I've got another version of this here where they're basically just looking at each other.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor's the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
And this one you melded. Another image that I loved, some of the stuff you did for Rugged Vinyl, the Quicksilver image where you sort of got this robotic man coming out of like the water.
Yeah.
Can you talk a bit about that? I really love that imagery and sort of what's the going on there.
Well, this one goes back a bit. You know when you try to remember something here that you just done it on the fly. but I just wanted to have somebody emerging from the water. And I wanted like that nice type of like sky where it looks like the sun is just about to rise or go down, so you don't quite know that. And it was just basically called, you know, quick silver. So there's no much thinking went behind this, apart from, you know, our characters basically just looking at you. So you don't know what he's thinking. You don't know, you know, what's behind it. But it's a little bit like a enigma. And if you look closely, you'll see there's a little fly on the water.
Yeah.
But I also did the back of the record. But this was the stage here where I used to do like the front of the record. I used to do the entire design and send that off to the printers rather than just the artwork. And this is one of those cases. So Quicksilver came first. I also designed the logo for Rugged Vinyl. And the one with the aeroplane. Yeah, that was another piece of art that was never used. I don't know how that came about. I done artwork, it was paid for, but the track was never released. So the artwork was never used.
So it was never used?
Yeah, but I've got the original artwork upstairs in my portfolio. That's how it goes sometimes.
So you get to hold on to it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, I was going to say, I was just going to move to like the Audiotonic, that the Dreamland cover. I really love that as well. Can you talk a little bit? It sounds like these folks found you through Facebook.
Yes. they found me through Facebook. And they asked how much is for a piece of artwork. So I told them how much was going to be for a piece of artwork. And they also, but I also told them that you've got two choices. You can either get me to design something fresh, or I've got a few pieces from my back catalogue that might be interested. You might be interested in. So I gave them about what, 4 or 5 different images, and they picked this one for, you know, Dreamy, you know, Audiotonic. And that one's from my personal stock, because the original title of that, yeah, is called Heart of Bass. So she's basically, her head is coming out of a bass speaker. Yeah, that's one of my favorites. Yeah, the other one, Dreamland, is another one of my also, you know, personal favorites that I do. When I have like free time, I would just create a piece of artwork and have a bank of loose digital images. So if people want to basically do a record cover, I'll show them, you know, what I have available, and they'll just pick it, and they, you know, pay me, and then they use it. So, and it just takes no time at all. So every now and again, I have this like flurry of creating new pieces of artwork. So I've always got a bank of artwork that people can like pick and choose and use.
So the last image that you have before you move into sort of the flyer, so there's all these record covers, is the Rave Radio images, which I really love those, the calling the hardcore. So can you talk a little bit about those, and then we'll talk about some of your flyers?
Yeah, calling the hardcore. I met Sammy, the head guy at the Rave Radio, at an event up in London at this place called the Aquarium. It was called History of Rave. And I was asked to go down there to put on an exhibition of my artwork, as well as other rave artists. So I met him down there, and he said to me that he's got an idea for doing a hardcore album, and he asked me if I would be interested, so I said yes. And the way that one came about, yeah, I just basically wanted it to be a little bit like surreal, but he he had the strict guideline where he wanted it to basically look like 90s rave, like a 90s rave image. So that's why I chose like the person walking into this unknown, with planets around him and this like checkerboard, which is like very prevalent in rave flyer design of like the 90s. The sequel with the blue background, I had this, the other idea is like, it's basically try to progress the story forward, where you see the person now. You can see the person walking from the back, and also you can see a woman walking towards him. So we don't know if he's walking towards the woman or away from the woman. And this is set between a big expanse of space, and you can see the Horsehead Nebula on the side, and you can see the planets and bubbles. You know, I'm enjoying doing this one because the next one is going to have like another continuation of the story if he was to do it.
Mm-hmm. So you have all these sort of album covers, and then you have flyers, and you start with the rave world. And so can you talk, because you, from my understanding, you can correct me, you weren't really into going to raves and hanging out at raves, but you started doing these flyers. So, and the first series you have here is for Rave World. So can you talk a little bit about designing flyers for a subculture that you really weren't a part of at the time?
Well, it's interesting. At the time, I wasn't into it, but it fed into the music that I used to do the covers for. Which is like an interesting thing, because I met Mr. Rayboy at Kicking Records, and they used to put on some of the acts from Kicking at their raves, and I also get invited to some of the raves. So I've been to a few raves as well, and I found you know thoroughly entertaining and quite cool, really, because it's the first time where you're in a place full of like thousands of people listening to loud banging music, and they're all happy, you know, happy and drinking water. Yeah. So this one with the three disembodied floating heads in space all came about because his budget was very small, and you wanted to basically produce these flyers here over, say, a period of like 3 months. So 1 month, you'll have a blue flyer. The next month, you have a red flyer. And then the following month, you have a green flyer. So they used the flyer three times over 3 months. So I suppose it's great for them because they only had to pay me once. So the next one on the page here is another Rave World one. I think I had less time to do this one, and the printing wasn't too good. It's like they've changed the printer. But that sometimes happens there, where you're happy with the original artwork here, but the print lets it down. But the Rave World one with the three heads, that's my favourite flyer, only because that's the first one. That's the first one that basically set the scene.
Mm-hmm. I really sort of love the last Rave World flyer you did as well, with the mouth with and the the like fingers holding the earth.
Yes, the popular myth is that flyer contributed to getting the raves actually banned.
Oh,
you know, it's like. Because the rave promoters had a whole lot of like problems like getting their raves put on, so they had to go to like, you know, the local council and things like that, and they had to like follow certain guidelines. But I think when they saw the flyer, that probably pushed them over the edge, and they say, we're going to stop this, yeah, because you're going to have a lot of people taking ease. Yeah, I craftily put the word E on the planet Earth.
Which works really well.
Yeah.
Then you have this series for Peace Fest, which is really interesting, especially the first few images are just a sort of, you have a lot of images that are sort of dual images of people. So can you talk a little bit about the work you did for Peace Fest and those flyers?
Yes. The dual ones, the whole Peace Fest thing is like, it started with the bald-headed guy in the field, yeah, with the fire coming out of his ears. So that's basically Peace Fest 1992. And then they asked me to do another one. I said, wait a minute, what can I do? Oh, yeah, let's give him a sister. So I've done the female version of him in the field with the fire coming out of his ears. And then came the birthday. Peace Fest presented the first birthday. So that's where he's got a cake on his head. And then, you know, following up from that came Peace Fest 93, where you got the half black, half white, funky dread. Yeah. Under the water, swimming with the fish. And I quite enjoyed that one. It's basically like, unity. You know, that's why, you've got half black and half white. It's like, the unity aspect. It's the also saying that we're all part of the same family, really. So he's got his own version, and I've done the other version where it's, two women, black and white. And that one was the Love and Peace flyer. That was the last flyer that I ever done for them. And the fun thing is that I had very limited time to do it. I only had a day to do this flyer.
Hmm.
They couldn't pay me at that particular time, and they said, yeah, Junior, why don't you come down to the rave and we pay you? So I had to cycle at like 3 o'clock at night to central London to the rave to get paid.
Once they collected all their money.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Hmm.
So that was a quite fun story. But that's another piece of artwork that I've got upstairs in my portfolio that you managed to get back, because not all rave promoters was to return your artwork.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the saddest thing.
So we talked a little about your cover art for Slam and Vinyl, but let's talk a little bit about those images, some of the images for the raves as well.
Yeah.
Like you've got the first one you have in here is the animatronic woman with six arms, and these are very much cyborg-esque. So can you talk a little bit about this rave art?
Yeah, that one I call Robotic Carly. I thoroughly enjoyed doing that one, because that's another one of my fun pieces. Because this is the early days when I got into doing things on the computer. So this one, I had an idea. Yeah, I wanted to do like a full female torso, but I also wanted her to look like inviting, and maybe a bit menacing, because she's got like six arms, just like the figure of Carly, Indian goddess. And the background is just basically a straight background, straight textured background with a shadow of her. So, I thoroughly enjoyed doing this one, because it really works really, really well. And I still use that image today. It's on the back of the book as well.
Mm-hmm. And for them, and then you have some sort of Terminator-esque, cyborg-y images that you've did for sort of these flyers as well.
Yeah, in full effect.
Mm-hmm.
Because they just wanted somebody who looking like Arnie, Terminator-esque, half robot, half human. to go on the cover. So I've done my little research, drew everything out, and you know, airbrushed it very nicely. These two was never returned to me, and that is when I went full digital with doing everything on a computer because mm-hmm. of this one. Because otherwise, I would still be airbrushing by hand. But you know, I've totally enjoyed these 2 years because it's nearly like you've got this feeling, yeah, that you've basically cracked certain things with your art. You've got to a certain plateau, and then you think, yeah, I can go further from here because I know how to do it. I know how to achieve a certain look. And then they kept my artwork, and then I went digital. And even though we're doing it digital, you could put in more detail. It's not tactile, as you know. You can't mm-hmm. touch pixels, but you can touch a piece of paper.
So that brings me to a very different question that I didn't think about until you started talking about that. And, you know, you mentioned, I think in the intro or part of this book, it talks about people collecting your flyers and your artwork. So with these pieces and putting this book together, did someone ever track down this art for you? Like, how did this come about? Like, did you have to get it tracked, like these pieces that you never got back, right? Did someone track these down? Are they just reprints of a photo? Did you ever get the, have you ever, you know?
No. Luckily enough, I had about 99.9% of the flyers that I ever done artwork for. Even though I didn't have the artwork itself, I had the flyer. Mm. When you've got the flyer in a pristine condition, you can basically make a copy of it. So, and that is why when I started to do things digitally, yeah, you don't mind about giving people like original artwork, because there's no original artwork. All it is that you send them a file, a JPEG file, and they print straight from that, but there's no original artwork. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's quite amazing how, you know, the technology works. But tracking down artwork, no, it's been so many years that you can't really track it down, because you have to find the people first, and then the people might have, like, you know, a dodgy memory where they can't remember, because usually the last place the artwork ends up at is the printers. Before they print it, they have to basically have to scan it. So I don't know if it's taken from there to someone else's house and whatsoever. But luckily right. enough, I've got a whole lot of the record covers that I've done, and I've got the majority of the Ray flyers mm-hmm. that I created by hand. But It's all fun, but I do miss a couple of them though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was wondering, yeah, thinking that somewhere, right? Somebody might have it.
Well, and there is a story that I worked for a promoter, a rave promoter, and they had this thing. I produced the artwork, and they wasn't returning it. So I said to them, how come you're not returning my artwork? And they came out with this one. Well, it's like this, yeah, we always keep the artwork. So I said, so you know, you can't really argue with that one. But I said, for all the artwork that I've done, make me a chromoline, which is basically just like a nice copy of it, a nice resolution print. So they only done this twice, but they were still coming back to me for like original artwork. So, change the scene. Many years later, I actually hooked up with the person who used to like commission me to do the artwork. And he said, yeah, Junior, this was my favorite place. I said, yeah, what happened to it? I said, yeah, my son took it to school and claimed that he did it and lost it. Yeah. You have to laugh.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, and you have these sort of images from the, you know, early and mid 1990s, but then you are also still doing flyers. Like you have some flyers from just last year in here as well. So can you talk a little bit about some of this more recent work you've been doing, like The Last Man Standing, and sort of the Berlin Reunion and some of the more recent pieces?
Yeah. Have a look. The Berlin Reunion one was fun. The Berlin Reunion one, because I actually done that piece of artwork, you know, years before.
Mm-hmm.
But because they was basically needed a piece of artwork in a hurry, because I told them of the time frame to actually create a piece of artwork, and this one basically suited it down to the T. Because in the middle of where it says Berlin, there was actually a tank with a woman's face in it. That was the original artwork. And I wanted to put the front entrance of the club in the middle. And that's where it says Berlin, because that's basically the front of the club. So they was quite happy with it. So happy to the fact here that when it went off, they actually got a big one printed and signed and actually sent it to me.
Mm.
A big piece of signed vinyl with my image on it. So I was quite happy with that. But I'm really mm-hmm. happy with that image here, because it's nearly like a testament to the days of doing science fiction. You know, doing, you know, robots and creation. Where you've got like you know, two robots with like, you know, their staffs guarding the entrance to this Berlin club, you know, which says a lot.
Mm-hmm. And you have some, so you sort of end, because we've been talking for a while, you sort of end with some of these images that you've literally just done very recently, right? So for Timeless and for Flashback, and also sort of the Agony and the Ecstasy. So can you talk, do you want to talk a little bit about I really love the Timeless piece for the Violet Night with the winged
winged angel with the backdrop mm-hmm. of like a very hot sun behind him. But that was originally done as part of my stock, really. So when the people from Timeless got in touch with me and they asked me my prices, and I told them, and I also said that I've got a few pieces that have never been used, you want to see. So they picked this piece. So that's how that one came about. And if you're looking at the book right now, you can see the rough sketch
mm-hmm.
of how it looked before. So it's quite similar, the end of it. But afterwards, you get the rough sketch, you scan it in onto a computer, then you start to basically digitally paint it. Yeah, I enjoy this piece. It's one of my favorites, but not my all-time favorite. The Flashback piece, if you remember that record cover that I did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you go.
Yep.
Back. It's basically that one. In the heart of base artwork, reconditioned.
Mm-hmm.
So some of these pieces come back again, because I like the idea of like doing mashups of my own work to create new artwork.
Mm-hmm.
So you take a piece, put it into a different setting, add something more, and then you come up with a new piece. And I find that, you know, quite fascinating when it comes to like, you know, artwork. How much pieces can you make from one piece of art?
Right.
And it's nearly endless. As long as you've got, you know, the imagination to go forward, yeah, you can always produce like a few more pieces or put another item into the mix and just make it more and more grand. So it's constantly evolving. The art is constantly evolving.
So usually, so we've talked for a while about your work in here. And so usually when I end, I ask sort of, are you working on a new book? But for you, what are you working? I mean, is there something that you're working on now art wise, something you're putting together, or is it just sort of, you know, business as usual, or what's on the horizon?
Well, one of the things on the horizon yet is like, I would like to do a 3D version on the computer of Space Gladiator, the female Robocop with gun and shoes. I would like to do a 3D version, yeah, so that can be 3D printed. That's one of the ideas. And I still tinker about my 3D to make my 3D better. And I work on like smaller projects. I just finished reconditioning someone's logo, which was quite fun. He wanted it more 3D, because it's basically like flat, but he just wanted it to have more depth. So I just finished that and smaller projects. But now I'm looking for work in these like pandemic times.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Where raves and other things aren't happening.
No, but would you believe people are still making records?
Yeah, I know. Records are huge.
You know, they're still making records. They're still having digital releases.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I suppose, yeah, that when we come out of lockdown and people can, you know, go to like clubs and have events, I suppose that it'll be all oversubscribed because everybody just want to get out there and dance.
Right. Yes. So, and hopefully they'll be okay. So it's been really great talking with you. We're coming up on an hour. So,
well, it's been great talking to you.
Yeah. So again, this was Junior Tomlin, who has a collection of his flyer and cover art from working with raves for the past, 30 years?
Yeah,
about
30 years.
30 years. I feel old when I say that. So I'm sure you do too, because I remember.
Well, you sound like a young lady.
I am almost 50. And so some of these images remind me of the rave scene in the US. Yeah. Came a little later than the rave scene. Everything in the UK, right? We take it and pretend it's our own and it's not. But some of these bands and some of this music I remember from when I was at university. So, yeah. But it's been really great speaking with you about them. Again, this is New Books Network, New Books and Popular Culture. Junior, thanks for talking with me.
My pleasure. We must do it again sometime.